I Afternoon, everyone. I just need a moment to set everything up. I think it's time to start. I guess it's about time to start. Hello, good afternoon, everyone. Welcome. Nice to see you all. There were supposed to be around 60 people enrolled in this course, and I only see about 35 or so people, so maybe some people decided to drop it. But I'm looking, there's not much elbow room if everyone decides to show up. So maybe I can try to get a bigger room, but let's see how it goes. All the information I'm going to talk about today about the course and the administration of the course should be on the Google page. I don't know, I think I had it up and running about a week ago. I think all of you are enrolled on it. If you're enrolled in the course, perhaps you've already had a look at it. I'm not sure, but let me just go over it. And if you have a look at it, maybe you have some questions, and I can try to answer those questions or clarify. Do I need the microphone or am I okay? Okay, my name is... So this is Real Analysis 1, Math 2001. There's only one section. This is it. There we are. My name is Paul Sheptitsky. It may be hard to pronounce, so I can write it for you once phonetically. My contact information is there, my email, my office number, and I don't have a phone number. I guess I prefer not to be called by phone, but you can certainly email me. I will respond quickly. I don't have any specific office hours set aside for this course, but that doesn't mean I don't want to see you in my office, I think. The easiest way for me to answer your questions, to assess where you may be having difficulty, to help you, is in a one-on-one kind of tutoring capacity. So I'm happy to use you anytime. I'm pretty much in my office from Monday to Thursday. I am the chair of the department, so I have lots of other obligations and meetings and the like. But my favorite part of the job is teaching, working with students, and the like. So I'm happy to interrupt. I can, whatever I'm doing, to help you if I'm not with another student or something that really needs my attention. However, if you really want to make sure that you can meet with me, make an appointment. Send me an email about when you would like to meet with me, and I can let you know if that's a good time, and I can set aside that time. Actually, I printed this out today. Now, the Math Stats Lab is, I think probably all of you know about it because you've been around already for at least a year, most of you. But if you are a new student who's just transferred and is taking this course, the Math Stats Lab is a drop-in tutoring lab staffed by both faculty and graduate students. And almost all of them should be able to help you with the material in the course. So if you can't get help directly from me and you need help on something, you can go to the Mass Stats Lab and presumably somebody there to try to help you at least, or give you some guidance and some talking about how to proceed on a homework assignment or material that was covered in the class. I didn't put the location, but it's on, it's in the South Ross. Does anyone know the number of Mass Stats Lab? It's on the fifth floor, right, on the South Ross fifth floor. There are the prerequisites. Some of you have asked me about those, but if you have any questions, I'll be happy to answer those if you're not sure. If you satisfy the prerequisites or if you have questions about them, this is the textbook. I will be trying to follow it fairly closely. I will be, especially at the very start of the course, which I should talk about today, I will be deviating from it slightly, but I'll be more or less following the book as closely as I can. Grading. So there's going to be a homework, a midterm, and a final. So the homework will count for 30%, the midterm 30%, and the final exam 40%. I will certainly talk more about the midterm as it approaches, like what the content will be, what the format will be, and what you can expect in terms of the level of difficulty and the types of things. And now, Math 2001. Nope. Okay. See ya. The homework assignment. So there already are, there's already one homework assignment posted. It's a bit unusual in that it's not necessarily directly related to all of it. It's not necessarily directly related to content that you're responsible for. However, I want to give you an opportunity to get started on something right away. Some of the problems should be familiar if you've taken Math 1200 or any other proof-based course. I will talk about the homework assignment in a moment. And it will also give you a chance, I'll talk about this in a moment as well, to learn about the format in which I want the assignments to be submitted. I'll talk about that in a second. There's a document program called LaTeX. How many of you have heard of LaTeX before? Oh, some of you. If you didn't raise your hand, and both people on both sides of you did not raise their hand, I would recommend moving and sitting next to somebody who's done it before, because the quickest way to learn LaTeX is to sit down with somebody and see how to do it. It's really quite easy. If you've ever coded in HTML, it's very similar. You have similar kinds of commands to generate. Community for producing documents that include mathematical formulas and textbooks. So if you're a math major, it's worthwhile to learn it. It's becoming more and more common in our math stats program for us to require assignments and projects to be handed in LaTeX format. So it won't be just for the course that you'll be learning it. If you learn it, you'll find other uses for it down there. I use it for everything, including letters of recommendation that don't have any mathematical text in them whatsoever. It really produces publication quality documents. Lots of fine-tuned flexibility to create what you want to create. And it's not at all cumbersome, like Microsoft Word, for example, that produces horrendous mathematical text. So there's my spiel about homework assignments and about the first assignment and LaTeX and all that stuff. Let me make some remarks. If you look down here, you'll see there's a paragraph on academic honesty. I will quickly go over that in a moment, but let me just, since it's up here under on your homework assignments, let me reemphasize this. I expect when you're on the homework assignments that you'll be working together on these. Some of this material is quite difficult, and I'm not expecting you to hold up by yourself and figure it all out by yourself. You learn by bouncing ideas off of friends, colleagues, others who are struggling with the material. And so I encourage you to form study groups in this class or find at least one other person to help study, go over notes, etc., and work on the homework assignments. However, the assignment you hand in should be your own work. If I get two assignments, they look verbatim, same typographical errors, same sentences, I don't want to see that. I want to see that you've learned how to do this and then you have written it down in your own words. Okay. However, if you do, if you do work on this with somebody, please indicate on your homework assignment, I solved problem one on my own, if you want to say that. I worked on problems 2, 3, and 4 with the following individuals and we worked on them together. This is my write-up of what we figured out. Question?
Okay, you answered that question.
So just, if you have worked with somebody on this and you're concerned that your solution looks similar to someone else, don't let me try to sleuth it out and figure it out. Tell me, and I'll be very happy. If you're just upfront about who you got help from or who you helped, then that will eliminate any possibilities of misunderstandings. Okay. The syllabus. Do I mention the chapters? I do. So what is this course about? In some ways, you're probably going to be maybe irritated. I know from talking to my son, who's in high school now, every year we cover the same thing again. We go over it again and again and again and never feel like we move anywhere. So this course is a little bit like that. We are doing the theoretical underpinnings for all the stuff you did in calculus, essentially about continuous functions, derivatives, the main theorems from calculus that were given to you as these black box tools that you maybe had one or two cookbook kind of problems that you had to apply, but we want to understand really the theoretical underpinnings of the structure of the real line, continuous functions on the real line, and all of that theory that is used to rigorously build up the theory that's in calculus, differential integral calculus. I hope to get to the derivative and the integral, so we'll see a formal definition of, I think you have seen a formal definition of the derivative, or you should have in Math 1300, 1310, or the equivalent. You saw kind of what the Riemann integral was, but there's a lot of hand-waving and I think vagaries around how you define it in a rigorous way via limit. So we'll get to that eventually. But it will take us a little while, because we'll spend a lot of time just on the real line, the notion of completeness, property of the real line, continuity of functions, and something called the topology of the real line into metric spaces, in some generality. That's the main purpose of the course. We have a textbook, and so I think I refer to the actual sections of the textbook. Chapters 3 to 9. Okay, I don't know if we'll get through all of that, but that's the target. And the earlier material is I'm assuming that you know it. Okay, so that really means material from chapters 1 and 2 and section 3.1. Just trying to remind myself what was section. Oh, natural numbers and induction. Yes.
Oh, I just want a question about that.
Sure.
What edition is that?
It's the 5th edition.
Oh.
You have the 4th?
I'm not sure. I think I have the 5th, but I could have the 4th.
Okay. Well, if you... Yes?
I have the 5th, but it's a pure centric. Like, it's a new edition for, like...
But it doesn't look like this?
No.
I have another one that's... Is it thicker?
It's like... It has a zebra on it.
It has a what?
It has a zebra.
New
A zebra, you said?
National edition, yeah.
Has a zebra on the front?
Yeah, it's a new international edition, but it's...
International, okay.
Yeah.
Is it in Esperanto or something?
Mm-hmm.
Okay. Well, if you want to, you can bring it down. Do you have it with you now?
It's online.
Oh, it's online. Okay. Well, if you want to look at mine, you can compare the names of the chapters. You can hand that around if other people have other questions of a similar nature. I saw another hand go up. Yes. Oh, it's up for you. It's up to you. So I am not going to assign groups to work on it. I'm not saying you have to work in groups. If you are more comfortable working on your own, that's fine.
But you say that the homework assignments are big, so is it fine to... you say it's usually too big to work on your own?
No, I think not everyone, but some people find this material very challenging, and they find it difficult to work on their own and figure it out by themselves. I'll be honest with you, some people are able to very easily and are better working on their own. And so if you wish to work on your own, you find that you're able to, please do. But if you want to have someone to study with, there's one person on your right, another person on your left, you can introduce yourself and say...
Do you have office
hours? Oh, I think I said at the beginning that I don't have scheduled office hours, but I'm happy to meet by appointment. So if you would like to meet with me...
Can we give the email then?
Okay, do you have access to Moodle?
Oh.
Do you know what Moodle is?
Yes.
So this is my Moodle page. But I'm happy to scroll down again.
Sure.
So I'm not expecting you to write down everything I'm saying now, because everything I'm saying now is on the Moodle page.
Okay.
So my email address... is my last name, without the last letter, at yorku.ca. Yes?
I'm sorry. If you submit your homework and you find it's too similar to somebody else,
don't worry about it. I'm not worried about coincidences. I'm not going to hunt people down and prosecute them for cheating out of some vague sense. I just want to let you know what is the spirit of what I expect to do. It's very difficult to generate the exact form of text by chance. Everyone's proofs, these proofs are not, most of the proofs on the homework are not really super deep. I really do hope everyone's proofs for certain basic results start the same. I hope you do remember from any proof study you did in Math 1200, if you have a statement that's for all epsilon greater than zero, for example, the start of your proof should be fix epsilon greater than zero arbitrary. So I would expect and hope that all 65 homeworks that are handed in would all start with that same sentence, and I wouldn't expect that to mean that you were cheating. Okay. Now, if you all misspelled epsilon as espelongi or something like that, I would be a little curious.
Online.
I'll give to all of that. How does that book look? Is it the same as yours?
Mostly, yeah.
Mostly.
It's just like the pages are not. They don't line up.
Okay, well, but the sections all line up?
Yeah.
I do refer to a couple of pages on the first homework assignment.
Yeah.
So hopefully that won't cause confusion. Okay. Any other questions? Yes.
How many assignments did you give?
About one every 2 weeks or so. So five or six.
Okay.
What is...
I'll get there. Sorry? Like this way?
Yeah, what does CPA?
To be announced. So at York, the final exam schedule is never announced at the same time as the lecture schedule. For some reason, they need time to figure out and find rooms that will accommodate students. So sometime about the fifth or sixth week of class, is that right? Somewhere around then? They will assign us a room and a time for the final exam and a date. Okay.
questions?
Lovely.
Do you all know about the Bethune class representation program? So Bethune College, which is both the residents and also the Faculty of Science, undergraduate college for administratively many science majors are, runs a number of different programs. One of them is they look for volunteers from this class to act as the Bethune representative. They're kind of the liaison between me and you, and also organizers of study groups and the like. So what did it say here? This program is designed to strengthen the ties between the students and course directors, instructors, that's me, students, you, to help students get more engaged and perform better in their courses. If you're a first or second year, if you're in a first or second year course within the Faculty of Science or LaSonde, please consider applying. What I was told to tell you is what's in this paragraph here. I'll get to that in a moment. So you'll receive training and support from the coordinator, Sam Dungsa, if I'm pronouncing that right. In addition to the benefits provided to the class, it gives you a class representative program also helps you develop your leadership skills. So if you are interested in doing that and interested in finding out more, there are two things here. There is the link, and there's more information in this PDF file on the Blue page. There's a paragraph about academic honesty. I have a link to the York policy on academic honesty. Please don't cheat. It's not worth it. I'm not expecting to have any problems, but there is a policy that I will follow if there are some issues. Using LaTeX to submit assignments. So I have this big long paragraph about LaTeX with links to online resources, including online sites where you can compile a LaTeX document into a PDF to make it look like a beautiful mathematical file. So one of them is called Overleaf. That's the one that I would use. Here's Overleaf here. I've already made myself an account. Oh, because this is not the actual overview.
It's not the website.
Ah, that's interesting. That's just a copy of it. How weird is that? So the link on my Google is bad. So I already have one here, so let me just get rid of it. And I'll just give you some quick tips about how to get started. So if you go back to my Moodle page, I've given you two objects to play around with. One is the original, so the first homework assignment, which I'll show you here. That's a PDF of the homework assignment. Maybe some of you looked at it. So how did I create that? Well, the file I used to create it is this one here called LaTeX file of homework. So if I download it. And if I open it up, I want to open the text file. You can open it with just the standard text file. So let's see. What is the name of the standard text editor?
Note.
Sorry?
Note.
Is there, do you see notes here somewhere?
I said it's probably popping up when you just start typing.
OneNote?
No. If you click on the search at the bottom of the screen and you just start typing note, it should come up.
Notepad. Would it be in downloads?
No, you just need to change it because it's only on the text files. And,
can you help me? Can you want to, someone want to come up here and help me open this stupid file? So here. So I want, okay, I want to open, save link as. So, oh, but it's just a link.
No, you already downloaded it. Just open up the file opener in the notepad.
Okay. Here.
Just click open here.
Open.
And at the bottom of the screen, you see it only loads up text files. So just change the whole file.
And then I go to downloads. Ah, there it is. That's homework1.txt. So then, okay, that's it. That looks pretty ugly, but it's pretty standard. There's this long preamble which tells it what to do. You can just copy and paste that. But let's copy and paste this into Overly by creating a new project, blank project, give it a name, test, what you call it. And then it already creates kind of a start of a template to create a document. You can get rid of all of that and just paste in. How do you do that? Copy all of this. And then how would I paste it? There it is. And then recompile means compile it, so turn it into a PDF. And it's hard to see there, but it created the homework assignment for the summer. And you can play around with the text on the left to see what it does on the right. And there is another file I have there, which is a sample solutions file. So I gave a couple of proofs of standard results, like something about one-to-one on two functions, something else about the proof that the square root of 2 is irrational, things you might have seen before. But it gives you a sense of the presentation I expect to see on your homework assignments. So you can play around with this on Overleaf. To create these PDFs, you can download the PDF after you've created it, and then you can submit it. I'll talk about how you submit the homework assignments later. I'm still waiting for the enrollment to settle down to create the place to submit the homework assignments. Okay? Please have a look at this over the weekend. Play around with it a little bit. If you want to get some more information, I think if you go, not here, but if you go back to the original Overleaf page under Help, under Documentation under Help, if you're new to LaTeX, it has tutorials about how to create LaTeX documents. Okay, so if you've not done this before, you can play around with it. Really, with about an hour of work, you'll get a feel for how to create these things, and you'll be able to easily create the first homework assignment, which you will then create a PDF for in order to hand it. Yes? First assignment is due
on the 17th of September. So let's make sure that's information. We can find that information here. Okay, well, it's I think if you look at the PDF of the documents here, well, not that one, sorry, I'm doing that for a second, this one is due September 17th. It's going to be an online submission. It'll be at noon on September 17th. Okay? As you can see how adept I am at technology, if you don't get it in at noon on September 17th, I won't be able to figure out how you can add it in. Okay? Certainly with the first assignment, I maybe will give some flexibility and we'll figure out how to get it in if it's a few minutes late. A day late, forget about it. And certainly if you miss one assignment, that will not affect your homework grade. I will take the grade of the best N minus one out of the N assignments, however many it ends up being. The first assignment may be or may not be, depending on your background, relatively easy. Later assignments may be more difficult. Let me just make sure something's clear about these assignments in case you want to look at it over the weekend. Problem one, complete the fill-in-the-blank practice problems 2.1.14, page 45, etc. Can I have my book back, please?
Oh.
Is that better? Oh. Okay, so there are three problems like this where they have a theorem and they have a proof. You just gotta fill in the blanks. But I don't want you just to give me the series of words that fill in the blank. This is also a little exercise in creating a LaTeX document. Create this text with the blanks filled in. I think I even say, type out the complete paragraphs underlining the filled in text. You gotta figure out in LaTeX how to create an underline. And it's pretty, it's actually a command, / underline, put it in curly brackets, this text you want underlined. Okay, stuff like that. This is mainly, it's a little bit of an exercise in understanding the structure of proofs and how a proof should go for a particular kind of statement. So it does require, you know, maybe some review of the material that you did in in Math 1200 or in a proof space course of any sort you've taken or practice writing proofs, but it's just fill in the blank. It's not constructing the whole. So that should be pretty easy for you to do. And that was problem one on the assignment. So let's go back to. Problem two is a kind of a similar type of problem to the one that was just a fill in the blank problem. It's about set algebra of sets. The intersection, the complement of the union of some family of sets is equal to the intersection of another family of sets. Problem three is an induction problem, relatively straightforward induction problem. I'm happy to spend any time discussing these after you've had a chance to look at them and work on them a little bit, but I don't want to just talk about anything now. And the only one of any kind of substance, I believe, in terms of this course is problem number four. I'll talk about that in more detail maybe even today after I get over through all of this stuff, if we have time, but certainly on Tuesday. Okay. So this would be maybe a good stopping off point to what we want to talk about next, but I'll for now just ask, are there any questions about this? Yes?
Is there any material where you could learn probability
of that symbol and leaf? Yeah, on the Overleaf website. So which symbol are you talking about?
The
union.
Oh, the big union. I'll tell you what it is. But all of that you'll find if you look at those LaTeX files that are on the Moodle site, and if you go to the Overleaf site and look for the, to the tutorial. But I will say how you do it. So which one is there? The union with the I element of capital I. So all mathematical symbols have to be written in between a pair of dollar signs. So dollar signs indicate inside is a mathematical formula. So that one right there is B, and then a backslash indicates that you have a name for some kind of symbol. So that backslash up there is not produced by making a backslash, but it's produced by the statement set minus. Because you're subtracting one set from another. So there's a subtle difference between the symbol that's up there and an actual backslash. And then the big union sign is big cup. This was obviously designed by a 4-year-old. What do I call that symbol, Johnny?
Call it big cup, Daddy.
Sub I backslash N I. Backslash N is backslash S being an element of. Which is different than epsilon. It looks different, but it's a different symbol. I mean, it looks similar, but it's a different symbol. And now, A, how do I put that subscript I there?
Just
underscore I. This I had to put inside parentheses because it's a long statement.
Yep.
Right. If I didn't put this, then the I would be in the subscript, and there'd be just back. There'd be element I written next to it. It wouldn't be in the subscript. Here, there's only one symbol in the subscript. You don't have to worry about it. Equals. Luckily, equals is just equals. And now, what do you think? Okay. What's that? What happens if you turn a cup upside down and put it on your head?
Cap.
Or no, close, not half, but it's cap. Cap. Big cap. B, now you should be able to figure out the rest of this. Set minus A underscore I. That centered formula, that's how you would make it. Actually, if you just did it like this, it wouldn't be centered nicely like that. It would just be within the text line. If you put double dollar signs around something, it sets it aside and centers it.
Question. October, is it October 29th? Is that what I had? It's right after, it's sometime after the fall reading. Sometime after. I wanted to give you guys two tests, but I realized I was going to cut into our time. Do you know if I have to, I actually have to rethink that data. I'm just realizing something. When's the last day to drop this course?
November 8th.
Sorry?
November 8th.
It was enough time. I have to make sure I get a major grade in before the last stage. So there'll be at least two homework assignments, and the midterm by which you can gauge how you're doing this course. Okay. Any other questions about the management or the administration of this course? Let's go back here for a second. More than enough information here for you to get started in some kind of tutorial. If somebody has no idea how to do LaTeX or never done it before, if somebody else wants to volunteer to give them a hand, you know, speak now. Try to find somebody who's able. So there are two LaTeX files here. One is sample solutions. You can read through those. I recommend reading those proofs. Those are things I expect you to have seen or to know. I'm happy to talk about the proofs that appear in here if you have questions. But this would be a good exercise for you to compile these LaTeX files and PDFs. Yes?
Isn't there a mistake? Shouldn't that big cap have an underscore?
Yes, I read something. Yeah, there was a subscript on here.
Yeah.
Sorry. Underscore, also I, and then B, set my mistakes. I went too fast. Let me also say, if you don't put this in double dollar signs, the underscore here will be put just like a, it won't look very nice. It'll look like just a subscript. It won't be put underneath the union sign. It'll look like this, as opposed to this. Mm-hmm. And if you put subscript and superscript, you'd like I equals 0 to infinity, the infinity will be put on top, it'll look like. And the symbol for infinity is / infinity. Most Greek letters are produced by just their names, /alpha, /beta, etc. Okay. So let's see what I've done today. There's one more thing. You see up there, there's assignment one file as a PDF with a PDF symbol. That's the actual text file, the PDF file of the homework. The other assignment one is a CrowdMark interface. There's something called CrowdMark, which is the program I use for you to upload your assignments. And it will allow the TAs who will be grading the assignments to actually just view them online, put comments on them directly. They won't have to print them out in order to grade them. And the comments will be put there. And when they're done grading, they will email you a link to your commented homework assignment. So it's a very nice grading interface for assignments and tests and the like. It's not ready to be uploaded yet because I have to upload all of your names to the CrowdMark site so that you can upload your assignments. But that'll be done next week sometime. And I will go over that once I have it set up and ready to go so you all can upload your assignments. So what did I say I would do today? go over the syllabus, course information before we begin studying the first minute topics of the course. I recommend reading through the material in chapters 1 and 2 and section 3.1, all of which I expect you to have seen before, except possibly sections 2.4 and 2.5. If you want to, you can look at 2.4 and 2.5 and see what those mysterious things are, but you're not responsible for them. The most important first topic that we will discuss in detail is the completeness property of the real line. So we're going to talk about the real line and what does it mean for the real line to be complete. So we might as well get started. So what do you do over the weekend? I would maybe play around with LaTeX, try to make sure you can get that assignment written up, maybe start working on some of those problems. And as I suggested, read the material that I already expect you to know. I don't really want you to go through and read it all, but you should page through it and make sure that most of it looks familiar. If some of it doesn't, please ask me if it's what's going on with that. And you should start reading ahead by reading sections 3.2 and 3.3, because that's really the material we're going to be diving into first. Okay? How are we for time? Oh, we still have about half an hour. So let's get started. So we're not going to do this, but there is a bit of spirit of this in what we are, how we started. Okay, the axiomatic approach to mathematics is essentially the approach that all working mathematicians accept as the right one. There are some basic set of axioms that are the self-evident truths that we accept. From which we want to be able to build up all kind of mathematical theories that we're interested in. Now, the accepted framework from a formal point of view, not one that makes necessarily intuitive sense, but from a formal point of view, all of mathematics is formulated in the language of set theory. So every mathematical object is a set. The axioms of set theory equal the axioms of all mathematics. So, for example, I think all of you are comfortable thinking of the real numbers as a set. It's the set of all real numbers. But each real number itself is also a set. It's a little more complicated, but for example, the number zero, from a formal mathematical point of view, is a set. And it's actually a very particular set. And if you asked your four-year-old nephew who named Big Cup and Big Cap what set that should be, well, zero is nothing, right? So zero, the number zero, does in fact equal the empty set. Okay, so this is not really important for this course. I'm just pointing out something which is accepted and true and part of mathematics, just to underline the point that we can formalize. I don't expect you to walk around now thinking of zero when you're balancing your checkbook and you're writing a zero at the end, that's the empty set, because you should still stick with your intuition, because that's how we think about mathematics, is with our intuition. But we sometimes have to make sure that what we're doing is valid, and so there's this very rigorous formal structure running around the background, which is guiding us. Question?
Yeah,
But the empty set and a set with the element zero in it are different.
Yes. So the set containing the empty set.
Can't you also
is different than the empty set, and guess what that is?
It's a null set.
It's a familiar friend of yours. What is that?
A null set?
No, this is the null set.
Oh.
That's a set with one element.
It's a set with one element. So guess what? That's the most convenient set with one element. So that really is the number one. That's the number one. That is the number one as far as a form. If you take a mathematician off into a dark alley and say, tell me what the number one is, well, they'll say, oh, it's a set containing the empty set. It's the most convenient set with one element. This is, now again, when you're balancing your checkbook, don't think of one as the set containing the empty set. This is, to a certain extent, formal rigor that's necessary to study the validity of the underpinnings of mathematics.
Wouldn't it be kind of better to describe zero as the set of elements such that the sum of 0 times 10 to the i...
Well, you just mentioned 0 in the definition of 0.
Oh.
Okay, no, this is really the right way to do it.
Right.
This is 100 years of formal mathematics in the work to try to find the right definitions, and this is it. What do you think the number 2 is? Okay, what are the most 2 convenient elements you see, different elements you see written on the board in front of you?
Yeah.
0 and 1, yes. So 2 is the set containing 0 and 1, which is, of course, the set containing the empty set, and the set containing the empty set. Okay.
Oh, boy.
Okay, I'll give you a headache thinking about it too much. But I'm just giving you a flavor of how this formal axiomatic formulation of mathematics comes about. We're not going to spend a whole lot of time on this. If you're interested in this, take a course in set theory or mathematical logic. So if you're interested in this, set theory, or look at a introductory text on set theory or mathematical logic. Yes, question.
I know this kind of has no place here, but didn't Godot disprove George Bertrand's claim that mathematics can be explained using a finite number of axioms?
Yeah, so not just a finite number of axioms, but a recursively. So again, if you're interested in those kinds of things, of course, the set theory mathematics will delve into it. So it's really a very deep, very beautiful area of mathematics with some deep and difficult philosophical questions like the one you just referred to.
Okay.
There's something called Gödel's incompleteness theorem that says no matter what axiom system you find, there will always be a mathematical statement that you can neither prove nor disprove. So in some sense, it's never no axiom system is complete.
So I assume that this kind of question has no bearing on this course.
Yes, it will not be on the final exam.
I mean, like, because we're just doing an axiomatic approach to mathematics, but the fact that, you know, Godot's incompleteness theorem exists doesn't really apply to this course at all.
Sure it does. It applies to all of mathematics. But we're not going to study Godot's incompleteness theorem in this course.
Okay.
If that's what you mean by it doesn't apply to this course.
Well, I mean, I'm just a bit, like, because we're...
No, the axiom system that mathematicians use, which is called Zermelo-Frankel set theory with the axiom of choice. By the way, these are listed in section 2.5, the one I mentioned that you may not be familiar to you. This is the accepted framework for all of mathematics, and Gödel's incompleteness theorem does apply.
Okay.
To this.
Thank you.
So what that means is, and it's true, in many different areas of mathematics, there are statements, problems, conjectures that people have formulated, and not only have they not solved them before, but they're not solvable, in the sense that you can prove that there is no proof of it or its negation. And that's part and parcel of being a working mathematician. You might be working to try to prove something is true, or try to even disprove, and what's lurking in the background is both of those things may be impossibilities. Yes?
What's the difference between the empty set then set aside a set.
Okay.
Can you explain this?
Yes. The empty set has no elements. It's empty. It's the null set. That's this defining property. In fact, in some formulations of the Zermelo-Frankel axioms with the axiom of choice, one of the statements is there is an x for all y. Y is not an element of x. Is everyone familiar with these logical symbols?
There exists.
There exists means that there is. It's a fancy mathematical logical formulation to say there is an object. So that for every other object, it's not in X. But this is the language of set theory. So there is a set, so that for every other set, Y is not in X. That's another way of saying the empty set. So what they said, this axiom asserts that there is an empty set. There is a set with no elements. Okay? Now how about this set? Does it have any elements?
Yeah.
It does. The empty set is an element. The empty set, the first axiom says that the empty set is a mathematical object. It is a thing which exists. It has nothing in it, but it exists. It's like an empty, it's like think of the empty set as an empty glass. Right? Put that empty glass inside of a larger glass. The larger glass has an empty glass in it. So this is the empty set. As opposed to That is just a mathematical convention, a way of. Here's a philosophical question for you. What is the number zero?
It's nothing.
It's nothing. Okay, but is that actually stating that it exists as a real object in the mathematical world? And if it's going to be a real object in the mathematical world, we should be able to point at it, describe it, and study it very concretely. And it's a matter of convenience how we choose to do that. And there are many, over the years, there are many different axiomatic or formal approaches to how to develop mathematics. And some logicians, mathematicians, thought that we should have a mathematical universe where there are these, essentially, what are they called? Like atoms. And zero would be just one of those atoms, one would be another atom, and then we would study the relationships between these atoms by writing down their properties. The set theoretic approach is to say, no, there are no atoms, everything is determined as a set, so we understand everything by what's inside it. So zero, we'll say, is the empty set because that's the simplest, most convenient, although maybe conceptually difficult to wrap your head around, object. And then we need something for one, so as a matter of just convenience, let's look at this set that has exactly one element in it, let it be the number one. There are lots of other interesting and convenient reasons why these are the right definitions, right? But that's just a matter of convenient choice. You're free to try to define it some other way, but for the formulas and the axioms of set theory, this is the right way to go. I'm not sure if I answered your question. I meant her question. Did I answer your question?
Well, now we imagine kind of the set definition as kind of like a function from the numbers 0, 1, 2, that formal way.
So that's very good. So one way you can think about it, you could imagine that the natural numbers themselves are given to us axiomatically. Right? So let's suppose that a natural we write down all the properties of the natural numbers that we would want, and they're written down properly. So what you're suggesting is, then what I'm describing is an isomorphism between the natural numbers and these sets.
Yeah.
I think that's the right way to think about it. And you should really go back and think of the natural numbers really as given. I'm going way off on a tangent here, much longer than I expected to, but I think that's the right way to think about it. Yes?
Two short questions. Of course, we will probably be using the E with the exclamation mark, there exists only one, right?
Well, you can prove there's only one.
I mean, like, in general, like in this course.
Yeah, that's right. There's lots of other notation that we'll be using, yes.
And second of all,
there is a unique. When you put an exclamation point, yes. That means there is a unique.
Is it safe to assume that every successive natural number is basically the set which has the cardinality of that, the cardinality of the set according to that natural number with only no sets and sets within sets, right?
Okay, well, I think you're asking how to define the successor. I won't go into it anymore, but since you're interested, that's the, oh, I'll write it up higher. Sorry. So if you put this inside here, this has an empty glass in it. So I just want to finish this metaphor. This is the difference between the empty set and the set containing the empty set. The empty set is the empty glass, and the set containing the empty set is a glass that has an empty glass in it. Or if you want boxes, maybe it might be better, a better metaphor. You're asking, how do you define n plus 1 from n? This is how you do it.
So in other words, that they are the first sets using only like the no set and sets within sets that have the cardinality of whatever number we're trying to find, right?
I think so. I think that's right. Okay.
Why is it not the null M union set of the null set? Because that's one.
Well, I had it here a second ago. Two we know is 1 plus 1, right? One was singleton empty set. So if we take singleton empty set and add singleton empty set to it, we get empty set and singleton empty set together. I said that was what two is. So how do we get n plus 1 from n? We take n and we stick it inside the set, and we included the elements that were already in N before. Again, this was meant, I don't really want to spend any more time on this. This was meant just for the behalf of, I don't know your name, I apologize. What is your name?
Daniel.
For Daniel's benefit, he was asking how one would think about the successor operation when you added one to something.
Thank you.
Okay. So, again, axiomatic approach. The book takes an axiomatic approach. The book's axiomatics start with the real line that has a bunch of operations on it, the algebraic operations, plus, times, there's an ordering, you know, the usual ordering on the real line, you all know what that is. The important, two important numbers of the real line are 1 and 0 from the algebraic point of view. 0 is the additive identity, 1 is the multiplicative identity, etc. And they write down all the properties that the real line satisfies, the algebraic ones and the order theoretic ones. Okay. That's fine. This is all stuff that you understand, and really I do want to be at this point by Tuesday next week, but I want to spend the minutes I have left today and maybe Tuesday, taking a couple of steps back. I'm going to take as the axiomatic start just the natural numbers. I want to think of the natural numbers as starting at 1 and so on.
Some of you may have a beef and say that zero should be a natural number. This is a matter of taste. But we'll start the natural numbers at one.
Okay. I thought that the natural numbers, including zero, were the whole numbers. Is that true?
Call them what you want. But just as our notational convention, the natural numbers start with one.
Okay.
If you want to look like a sophisticated set theorist, and you want to start at zero, call that little omega. Now, the natural numbers have a bunch of axioms which are sometimes referred to as the piano axioms. Sorry, how am I doing for time? I don't want to write them all down. If you want to, go to Wikipedia, look up the piano axioms. I'll tell you quickly what some of them are. One of them just says that the number one is an element of the natural numbers. And if you want, you can think of the number one as the set containing the empty set. So the natural numbers are a special set that has one in it. It also has a special function called the successor function. Which we want to think of as n plus 1. So we don't want to spend too much time thinking about what Sn, how it should be defined formally. In fact, Sn is supposed to be n plus 1. If you are a set theorist, this would be your successor function, n union singleton n. But the successor function is just n plus 1. So for any natural number, n plus 1 is also a natural number. That's all the second axiom says. The third axiom says that for every n and m in the natural numbers, n is equal to m if and only if n plus 1 is equal to m plus 1. Okay, these are things that you know are true about the natural numbers, but what are the simplest self-evident truths that you need to start with to prove everything else? That's what the piano axioms are. And the fourth one is, for every n and n, n plus 1 does not equal 1. So 1 is not the successor of any natural number. Of course, you can think of 1 as a successor of 0, but 0 is not a natural number. Okay, so those are the basic axioms about the natural numbers. And this is all you need in order to define addition on all natural numbers and multiplication on all natural numbers. As long as you have one more ingredient, which is induction. So the last axiom in piano axioms are induction. And there are really two formulations of induction that are technically not equivalent, but they're, for our purposes, the same. We'll never see any reason why they won't be equivalent. One of them is the following. For any property phi of natural numbers, if any of you were logicians, you would bristle at that. What do you mean by property? By a property, I mean a well-formed formula. So natural properties you can write down using and or and for all and there exist, etc., etc. So these are that you might say about the natural numbers. Like, for example, the statement phi of n might be the statement that n is even. Or phi of n might be the statement that n is odd. where 5N might be the statement that N is prime. For any property phi of natural numbers, if phi of 1 is true, and if for every n, phi of n implies phi of n plus 1, then you tell me, what can we conclude?
That is true for all.
That's true for all. Then, for every n, phi of n. Okay, that's the usual induction, you know. I don't want to go into details. One of the things that always students ask, when do I use induction and when do I use strong induction? What's strong induction? Anyone remember? You talk about that in 1200, maybe? Sorry, Daniel, maybe. Let me see if we can get somebody else to say something. Does anyone else know strong induction? So instead of saying for every n, phi n implies phi n plus 1, you would say for every n and for every k less than or equal to n, if phi k is true, then phi n plus 1 is true.
Yeah,
exactly. That's equivalent to this. Okay, and maybe in 1200 you spend some time showing that they're equivalent, I don't know. Is that helpful? Or is this in the way? So that's one version of induction. Here's the second version of induction, which is technically not equivalent, but for our purposes is. It says the following. For any k subset of the natural numbers, not empty, for every k subset of natural numbers, if 1 is an element of k, and if for all n in if n is in k, then n plus 1 is in k. So if I take an arbitrary subset of the natural numbers, and if I tell you that 1 is an element of the natural number, is an element of that set, and if I tell you for every natural number, if n is in the set, then so is n plus 1, then what can I assume, what can I conclude? K is the whole set of natural numbers. Okay, let me just quickly give a proof that 2 implies 1. So 2 is a statement about any property, any formula phi. So suppose phi is as in 2. It's some property of natural numbers. Yes?
Are the
2
numbers, are they different ways of saying induction? Are there different definitions on induction?
It's really the same principle expressed in different language. I think it'll become more transparent when you see when you see what I write down in just 1 second. And suppose phi has this property that phi of 1 is true, and for any natural number, if phi n is true, then phi n plus 1 is true. So it's a property of natural numbers that satisfies that. Okay. Then let k just be the set of all natural numbers satisfying phi of n. ask you a question. Is 1 an element of K? Yes, because remember, I didn't write it down, but I said let phi be as in product 1. So we're assuming phi of 1 is true. So that means that 1 is an element of K. Does K satisfy this other thing? If n is in K, is n plus 1 in K? Well, that's what we're assuming about phi. That for every n, phi of n implies phi of n plus 1. So if phi of n is true, that's the same thing as saying that n is in K. Phi n plus 1 is true is the same thing as saying n plus 1 is in K. So once again, we go back. To prove 2 implies 1, I suppose I have a phi. When I say is as in 2, what I mean is that phi of 1 is true. Phi as is in 1, what I meant by that is phi of 1 is true, and for every n, phi of n implies phi of n plus 1. That is, if phi of n is true, then so is phi of n plus 1. Phi of n being true is equivalent to saying by our definition of k that n is an element of k. So if n is in k, then n plus 1 is in k. So what's our conclusion then from 2? So now we have a K that satisfies the hypothesis here. So our conclusion is that K is all the natural numbers. So that tells me that every natural number satisfies phi. Phi is true for every natural number. Now the difficulty in the reverse implication, which the reverse implication is not valid. It's not true that 1 implies 2. And the problem is that there are lots and lots of subsets of the natural numbers that can't be described by formulas that correspond to properties of the natural numbers. Now, what do I mean by 1 doesn't imply 2? This is really a question in the realm of mathematical logic. That means in a formal sense, one can construct kind of an object which is like the natural numbers for which one of the properties holds. I mean, this form of induction holds, but that form of induction doesn't. Our natural numbers, they satisfy induction. They satisfy both of these. Satisfies a stronger one, so satisfies a weaker one. But there is some other weird object which is like the natural numbers in many senses, for which it satisfies 1 but doesn't satisfy 2. And that's in a weird sense because not every subset can be described by a formula. Every formula gives a subset, but not every subset is describable by a formula. Yes, Ben?
I just have a question. I know that you can generate any sequence using polynomials. I assume this is completely irrelevant here, but I thought I'm slightly confused.
Okay, what confuses you?
Well, you said that, well, any subset can't really be described in a formula. Oh, wait, no.
Not every subset can be described by a formula.
Oh, sorry, sequences and subsets are different by that, right?
That's not quite it, because every subset can be described by a sequence. But but polynomials are not the only way to describe sequences. Not every sequence can be described. Depends on what the coefficients are in the polynomial. But not every sequence can be described with polynomials. So that statement is not true. I'm sorry, and your name?
I'm assuming it's finite, my bad.
And I'm sorry, your name is?
Jean.
Jean?
Jean.
Jean. Okay, Jean, what was your question?
What do you mean, suppose he isn't as isn't to?
Have you ever done a proof by induction?
Yeah.
Okay, so let's look at the homework problem.
Well, actually, I didn't really get the
equation. Okay, so I want to tell you what I mean by let phi be as in 1.
Yeah, but okay.
supposed to be is as in to here. And I didn't quite get that.
There is no fee in to.
Yeah.
To does not depend on any fee.
Yeah, but it's written suppose fee
is, oh, as in one. I'm sorry.
Oh.
It's a write-up. Choco. Typo. I apologize. So this is what I'm going to correct me here.
Okay.
Oh, thank goodness you got that before they left. Okay, if you have questions about this when we come back on Tuesday, we can. Let me just quickly tell you the plan of attack. This is our base assumption. We have the natural numbers that have all their algebraic properties and induction. I'll mention one more thing related to induction when we get back. But from this, we're going to construct the integers, which is the positive and negative numbers, the rationals, and then we'll talk about how to construct the reals from that and why the reals have, and what the interesting properties of the reals are that we're going to study. Okay? Well, Tuesday, have an idea. There is a section on induction in the book, so this is in chapter 2.
Okay.
Or maybe it's, I can't remember, is 3.1 induction or is it chapter 2?
But it's covered in yours. So if I read from 1 to 3 again.
Yeah, yeah, it's in those sections I told you you should review and read for yourself.
That's right.
But it's, so.
Not to chapter 2.
Okay.
Section of chapter 2.
Okay, so 3.1 is induction.
Okay.
And you've seen proofs by induction before, haven't you?
I did one last year.
Yeah, okay, so they did quite a bit of that, I assume.
Yeah, it was kind of all over the place.
Who was the instructor?
Rivera.
Okay. She should have done that. Okay.
It was good. It was a lot, but we also had the strike, so it kind of it destroyed those.
Well, actually, there's one exercise on the homework assignment by induction. I'm happy to talk about it because I just want you to remember how to do proofs by induction. We're not really going to do a whole lot of them. Analysis is kind of different than it's not really an area where you do a lot of proofs by induction. It's an important tool.
Okay. Cool.
Well,
sorry.
Hi,
John. Like for the assignment, I just have this one for you, but I have to give this.
Oh, okay. I'll look at this. So this is your accommodations for tests and assignments and things like that.
Ooh, yes, please.
Is okay, so I'll look at this. Yeah.
That you could print the assignment 11x17.
Oh, you want to print? Are you not able to do that from the off the internet?
Oh no, I don't have an 11x17 printer.
Oh, I can't. So send me an email asking me to print out an 11x17 copy of the... now, do you think you'll be able to do things on LaTeX and submit things online, or are you going to have to submit hard copies?
Oh, are you okay with hard copy?
I'd prefer that you submit on... That's why I'm asking you. Will you be able to submit online? I have to read through your accommodation to see what it says.
Oh, I can type in LaTeX.
Okay, great. Perfect.
Well, I just need, the large paper for the assignment.
For reading it and looking at it.
Yeah.
Okay. So send me an email describing to me exactly what you need for the assignment, and I will do that for you.
Oh, thank you so
much. You're welcome. Oh.
Can I have one last question?
Yes.
Oh, for like the assignment, I couldn't do question two.
Which was question two? Is that the induction problem?
Oh, no, the union and the intersection.
Okay. Have you done problem one?
No.
Do problem one first and read through that material, because question two is related to the problems in that material. So if you're able to do problem one, try to do that first and understand what those proofs are. Don't just fill in the blanks. Make sure you understand those proofs. Then you'll have a better chance of doing problem two. And then I'll be happy to talk to you about it. I can meet with you on Monday if you want to make an appointment with me on Monday.
Oh.
I won't be in tomorrow, but I will be in on Monday.
Oh, what time are you in?
Send me an email, we'll make an appointment.
Oh, I see.
Okay.
Oh, thank you, Professor Paul. Have a nice day.